From the Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you are exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier. I am Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Welcome. Karen,
yes.
How are you this week?
I am apparently quite confused. That's okay. How I am this week.
Well, you know, I think the confusion comes in is because we have been plugging that we were having Ben Hansen on tonight. Unfortunately, though, Ben Hansen is not going to be able to make it. Something about a plane being delayed. And I think we were also talking about some cat named Monty Teo or something.
Catfishing. This is my theory, is that there is no Ben Hansen. And the wonderful guy who booked him for us, who is actually going to be one of our guests tonight,
right,
is actually pretending to be Ben Hansen. And we were fished in just like people in a bad internet romance.
I think that there's like some para-pranking going on here. But so anyhow, all right, I'm going to get this straight. Okay, tonight joining us, we have Ernie Alonzo, who is the owner and operator of Haunted Orange County in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And he is bringing on the show with him two authors. First off, we have F.J. Lennon, who is the author of two fiction books, actually, The Devil's Gate and Soul Trapper, and as well as a book about business called Every Mistake in the Book. He also knows a lot about Aleister Crowley, also knows a lot about Gettysburg, and also knows a lot about the haunted locations in Hollywood.
He knows stuff. And
he
haunted
knows
Hollywood,
stuff.
Pretty cool. That'll be
it
fun
is.
To talk about. Yes.
Yeah, you know, I was a couple weeks ago, my wife was telling me about how when she was a kid, they went to L.A., they went to Hollywood on vacation, and unwittingly, her and the in-laws had stayed at the Roosevelt Hotel, which is one of the most haunted locations
in
Hollywood. So, I mean, I have been reading his blog, and I'm definitely very much interested in talking to him about that as well. And we also have another individual that is going to be joining us tonight. I mean, we have got a cornucopia of paranormal weirdness tonight, my friends. Joining us as well is going to be Charles Spratley. Now, Charles Spratley is elite tour guide for Haunted Orange County, as well as the author of the book Piercing the Veil.
Is it Haunted Orange County or San Diego?
No, I said Haunted Orange County, but he is the author of Piercing the Veil, Examining San Diego's Haunted History. So we'll be talking to him. We'll be talking to all three of those guys as well. I mean, San Diego is the home, of course, of the Whaley House. So, you know, haunted locations in the world. So we're going to be talking to those three cats tonight.
All righty. Well, so that's what we are going to be doing. So I think you really, for as confused as you are, I think you've done a fantastic job of outlining the evening's festivities.
Yes. You know, it's kind of weird. You know, I'm kind of like one of those people that can really think, you know, quickly on their feet. But before we go to break, or, you know,
We're not anywhere near break yet, Rick.
I promised some friends of mine, some new friends on Facebook, CJ Machetto and April Pard, and I promised them that I would mention their website tonight. It's pararesistance@wordpress.com. Fairly new to the field, however, they do seem to get it. So if you get a chance, go over and read what they got going on. I am actually a guest of theirs this week on the blog. I wrote about my personal experiences and everything. So go and check out pararesistance.wordpress.com if you get a chance.
All right. Very groovy. And I have to tell you, I'm actually a little relieved that we will not be speaking to Ben Hansen tonight, because I have a little bit of a sinus infection, and I was sitting at my desk earlier, and I noticed I had some mad nose whistling going on. So, you know, that's always embarrassing. And so if y'all hear some whistling, you're house isn't haunted, you don't need to adjust your thing. I have
Minus.
A sinus infection. So isn't that awesome?
Your sinuses are haunted.
My sinuses are ridiculously haunted. That's right.
Yes, they are. At least for the moment, anyways.
Yep, that's right. So anyway, looking forward to talking to our guests here in about 5 minutes. and sounds like you've got some exciting stuff going on. I also wanted to mention a few things that I know are coming up. One, of course, is the Oregon Ghost Conference. I'll be speaking there. It is the now I have to look at my calendar. I spoke before I was prepared, Rick. Can you believe I did that? It is going to be March 8th, 9th, and 10th in Oregon City, Oregon. And it is a lot of fun. They have a lot of really good speakers. Our good friend William Becker organizes that. And then William has just also opened up another great class. He's going to be doing another one of his Haunted Hotspots classes. And it's going to be Saturday, April 13th. And this is what's really cool about the Haunted Hotspots class that William is going to be doing. It's going to be at the Old Wheeler Inn in Oregon. And what's cool about the Old Wheeler Inn is it's been closed to paranormal investigation for a while.
And why is that exactly?
The usual reasons that people suddenly decide they no longer want paranormal investigators coming in.
Yeah, we had that problem here in my neck of the woods at the Volo Auto Museum, which is incredibly haunted. But after a certain television show was there, they no longer want people. They no longer want people of our ilk walking around their establishment.
Our ilk. So anyway, if you wanted to learn more about William's class, you can just go to Para Insights. I believe Paranormal Insights. You can Google it. You can find William and.
Okay. So, we were talking about the Oregon Ghost Conference, Karen.
We were actually talking about William's Paranormal Hotspots.
Yes,
class.
William. Yes, William.
And like I say, so it's the former morgue. It's a former TB hospital. And now a hotel. And, you know, I can almost guarantee it was also a brothel because, as you know, every place here in the Pacific Northwest was, at some point, a brothel. That'd be a good question to ask our guests later, too, is if, you know, every place down in Orange County and Hollywood are also brothels, because it seems like any place that's haunted, it's one of two things.
If in Orange County it was a brothel, if it's new in Hollywood, it's a brothel.
See? So it's either brothel or what's the other one, Rick? Do you remember the two things I say that everybody claims they were?
I just remember the brothel thing, but it's like here in Chicago, everybody's like, oh, you know, Al Capone slept here and aunt's here. It's like, nah, probably not.
Well, no, it's the other one, at least here in the Northwest, is Indian Burial Ground.
Indian Burial Grounds.
That's right.
You know what, though? If every place that was built on an Indian burial ground would be haunted, this entire country is practically a Native American burial ground. So it's like, I don't fall for that kind of thing.
I think that's
urban legend.
That's right. So let's do this. It's just about quarter past the hour. We'll go on break. And when we come back, we will be talking to our three guests. So stick around, everybody. It's Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hi everyone, it's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at Paranormal UG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen and Rick. And tonight joining us, as we mentioned before, we have a cornucopia of paranormal goodness tonight. We have got three people on the show for you. First off, we're going to be starting with Ernie Alonzo. Now, Ernie has been on the show once before. He is the owner and operator of Haunted Orange County, and he has brought their lead tour guide, Charles Spratley, who is also author of Piercing the Veil, Examining San Diego's Haunted History. And joining us in a little bit, or we can chime in if he wants to, is F.J. Lennon. He is the author of Devil's Gate and Soul Trapper, as well as Every Mistake in the Book. And he is also an expert on the haunted locations in Hollywood and has done a ton of research on famous occultist Aleister Crowley. So, everybody, welcome to the Underground.
Thank you. Thank you for having fun.
Hey, we got everybody. Hello. It worked out. So
we're all here. Fingers
crossed. Very good. So the first thing I wanted to talk about, Ernie, was I know that you had a couple of events because you do some events planning and scheduling, and you had some big events coming up soon.
Yeah, we actually have an event at the Heritage Square Museum. The Heritage Square Museum is a cluster of Victorian homes in Los Angeles. And we did an investigation event there last year. It was February the 4th, and we sold it out. And we're repeating that event with some different guests. And that's going to be taking place on Saturday, February the 23rd. We're just about sold out. I believe we have two general admission tickets left and then one VIP when I checked last. But... yeah, for more information on that, you can go to our website. It's hauntedoc or hauntedorange.com. And our special guests for that event are going to be A.J. Barrera. He's a psychic medium, and this guy is amazing. And we've worked with him before, and we're really happy to have him joining us, as well as Ben Hansen from Sci-Fi's Factor Faked. They'll be our two featured investigators. And so... guests will have a chance to investigate four different houses, and they'll kind of rotate to each house, spend about an hour or so, and investigate with four different investigative groups.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll also be having another special guest named Scott Grunewald. Scott has a show on the Travel Channel called Paranormal Paparazzi, and it just got renewed for a second season, so we're excited to have him with us. And it should be a great night. But there are, like I said, a couple tickets left. If anyone's interested, they can go to hauntedoc.com.
Now, Ernie, let me ask you this. You know, now that we've covered the of where the investigation is happening, I always personally like to know what exactly, spiritually speaking, are people going to expect? What kind of activity happens at these locations?
Well, we've done a couple of preliminary investigations with a couple of different groups. Last year, we got to go twice before our actual event. In at least three of the houses that we were in, the group picked up some EVPs that said my name through ITC. Actually said Ernie, mm-hmm. Ernie Alonzo. We like Ernie. Ernie Alonzo is here. And it said that all within the span of about 45 seconds.
Wow, you're like a cult leader to them, Ernie. That's great.
You know, I don't know. It was pretty creepy. I didn't hear it myself when we were there, but on our way home, we had stopped, and it was around 3 in the morning, and we were in the car, and Romero, who was with us at the time, said, "Hey, you know, did you hear them when they said your name?" And, you know, to tell you the truth, I didn't really hear it when I was there. So he plugged in the recorder into my car, and loud and clear, I was able to hear everything that he said had come through. So that was kind of a shocker, because it was the first time, not only that I had heard my voice said over ITC, but my first and last name. So that was pretty amazing for me to experience. Then in another house, we caught a little girl coming down the stairs. And I guess she said hello as Romero was kind of speaking that way.
Okay.
And what else did we get? We were actually featured in a book by Sally Richards, who's going to be one of the authors who's going to be presenting there. She wrote a book called Ghost Hunting Southern California. And there's a whole chapter in there where she talks about last year's event at the Heritage Square. And so... if your listeners are interested, they can go on to our website, hauntedorange.com, and on the event page, if they scroll down a little bit, they can read an excerpt of what some of the guests had experienced that night. So they had a lot of crazy activity. One of our investigators, his daughter, was in what's called the Octagon House, and she had her she had a, one of those little purses over her shoulder, I guess, and something yanked it so hard that it broke the strap, and everything fell out of her purse. And and she was in a room with about 15 people that saw that happen. Some of the houses, of course, are more active than others, but it was a great event last year, and we're really looking forward to picking up some interesting evidence this time around as well.
Yeah, it sounds like a very full time. It sounds like a very good time, and it sounds like you have some some people that are there. Of course, with Ben Hansen and AJ, I've read a lot on them. I've also watched Factor Faked. It's actually one of the very few shows I will, I find watchable. These are guys who really seem to know what they're talking about.
Yeah, this is our first actual event with AJ, but we've been, talking for, the past year. And Ben, of course, I think last time we were on, we were promoting the Skywatch event that we had done out in San Diego.
Right.
So Ben's got a lot of stuff going on. He's actually a firearms instructor, and he's going to be going out and teaching this weekend out, I believe, in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And then he also started, he has a company that he's representing for, and he's got a website called Night Optics. I'll get the right the website for you, but he is a distributor for military grade night vision equipment.
Ooh, night vision equipment.
He's got a lot of great stuff. It's not cheap, but it's like the top of the line stuff.
Cool.
So I will get that address for the listeners if they want to check it out and see what he's got up on there.
Cool. And I also did notice that we have in the chat room, somebody asked the team that you're on, Haunted Orange, they wanted to know if it was still affiliated with Romero.
No. What we did is Romero, in October, he started his own group. It's called the Orange County Paranormal Project. So you can find his website by typing in Orange County Paranormal, or you can also do Orange County Paranormal Project. And he's got some events that he's got lined up, and I believe you have to become a member of the website. So if you go on the website, there's instructions on how to do that, and then you can start receiving emails on upcoming events and things that he's got going on. He's got some exciting stuff coming up in 2012, so I believe you can also find him on Facebook under Romero Ramirez. I think it's under Romero Ramirez From Beyond Investigator. And then, of course, the page of Orange County Paranormal Project.
Cool. Okay. Thank you. I'm sure that was helpful to the person who asked that question because they were asking how they could look him up. So, perfect. So, let's talk haunted. We were going to talk haunted Orange County first, right?
Yes.
All right. So Orange County, now Cheryl lives in Orange County and our producer and does not go to haunted places, although she produces a haunted radio show, literally sometimes. So if Cheryl were to want to go somewhere, where's she going to go?
Well, she can start off by taking our haunted history ghost walk in Old Town Orange. And we have Charlie on the line with us, and he's our lead tour guide. He actually helped design the tour. So do you want to chime in there?
It's a great place to start.
Okay. So, hello? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we got cut off there for a second. So, Charlie, you being the Lord tour guide, you being the lead tour guide, what exactly does that the Lord tour guide? What exactly do the responsibilities of that entail? I mean, how do you are you the one that gets everybody together and says, all right, we're going on a ghost hunt? So, what is your function?
No, my function is actually a lot more bookish, I guess. I'm kind of like the historian. I'm the one that does the research on a lot of the places. I write the tours. Whenever we bring in a new guide or something like that, I train a new guide. I'm actually more like the historian side of the tour itself.
See, but history is so important,
right.
And I you cannot separate paranormal investigation and history, in my opinion. And you're absolutely right.
No, I agree with that.
So, tell me about some of the history in Orange County that makes it interesting and leads to some hauntings.
Well, the history itself is just so absolutely fascinating. You know how a lot of people that resided in Old Town Orange, they're either Civil War veterans because the town itself was founded right after the Civil War, all the way to, you know, you were talking about, oh, this place used to be a morgue and this place used to be a brothel.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Even Orange has that. I'm just waiting for the infamous, it was an Indian burial ground and now it's a brothel.
that would be like the gates of hell opening up, I think. I'm not sure.
But, it alone has such an absolutely fascinating history, and just the history alone, really leads into those ghost stories and makes them, it's almost like you're taking people on a journey through history, and you're using the ghost stories in a good way to link in that history.
Yeah. Well, I think that you need to be a researcher first before you can be an investigator. You kind of have to try to understand the thing that you're going after, and just having that history involved there, you get a better understanding of who it is that you're dealing with.
Exactly. But, over the years, I found out that, you know, because I used to run a huge tour company in San Diego, that almost all the information that was out there on these available places were wrong.
Yeah.
And so that's really why the book came out.
Well, and I actually wanted to talk to you about that, because I think that's a really important thing. So we have a lot of these teams, very young teams, a lot of them, that go out and they want to investigate a place, and then they want to look into the history. And so they go to Wikipedia. Or they go to Shadowlands or, you know, something like that. And you're right. So much of the history out there is wrong. So if you want to start learning the history of a place correctly, how do you do that? Where do you go? How do you begin taking
my books? No.
Oh, shameless self-plug. Nice.
We like shameless self-promotion. We're happy with that.
Yes. No, the best place to go is their local library.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many, you know, places that, you know, that are known for their ghost stories and stuff like that. But the most important thing, and again, when I started doing the research for my book, it just turned into, well, the reason this place is haunted is because this happened. Well, if that really happened, then it should be easy to find in a newspaper accounting.
Right.
Maybe.
Very true. And it's amazing. I'm sorry, Charlie. I cut you off.
No, that's okay.
Oh, okay.
No, go ahead.
But sometimes it's hard to find that information, because I know that, for instance, when I've investigated a location where there's all these stories about it, and you know none of the stories are true, but I tend to get information from the spirits there. And so I'm typically looking for a very specific piece of information that was given to me. And it's like finding the proverbial needle in the haystack when you have to find that one specific name or that one specific event. So what do? Do you go to the microfiches? Do you, call the local historical society?
I would say there's a C, all of the above.
Okay.
You know, definitely you start with your local library, you start compiling information, go to the local historical society. I found them to be a tremendous help, both in San Diego and in Orange County. They're so helpful, especially when you tell them what you're doing and what you really want to do. They're always very helpful.
Yeah,
Go ahead. I'm sorry, I was going to say in Orange, in particular, some of the libraries have the history centers, and a lot of the information that they have isn't, you can't check out. Some of it is in you know, in paperwork and documents that they can also pull for me, for you, at least, you know, where we did some of our research in Orange. So, you know, you always want to check that because there are some resources that you're not going to be able to find online that you can get through the history centers of some of the libraries.
That's the way the Pasadena Library was, with a lot of information about the Colorado Street Bridge when I was writing my novels, were, you know, documents and information that you could only look at under supervision. So you kind of have to feel out your librarians, because they're sitting on, especially the larger libraries, they're sitting on information that that most people don't realize is there.
And research can be really daunting when you starting out, because, I mean, there's all sorts of things. There are medical records, there are court records, and do you find sometimes that you wind up, and it's not all collected in the same place. I know when I was doing research for my book, shameless plug, right? Anyway, that I, you know, it wasn't just going to the library or looking on the internet or talking to a historical society. You know, there were cemetery records, there were court records in one place, and it, you know, so it's very, it's, so how do you develop a plan? Do you just sort of follow where it leads and conduct an investigation, or do you have a plan going in?
For me, I've always made this like my own little personal mantra that I follow the truth no matter where it goes.
Yeah, very good.
You know, and, you know, I start out, you know, libraries, I start out, the historical societies. The good news for me, I used to work for the San Diego Historical Society, so I knew my way going through there.
Yeah,
and so I've been through a lot of different museums, historical museums, and talked to a bunch of different people, because I totally feel like we speak the same nerdy language. And
you can speak all the nerd you want here. You're in good company.
Yeah, we speak
nerd. You know, in the end, knowledge is power. I mean, it took me over 2.5 years to write my book.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and that's it. I think we expect everything so instantly now that people want to be able to just Google something and find everything they need to know about it. And it just unfortunately doesn't always work that way. It's you know, a little more difficult than that, I believe.
Absolutely. With you know, researching the suicides at the Colorado Street Bridge, I literally had to go through microfilm and look, you know, month by, you know, day by day, month by month, to sort of do my own tally of how many people have jumped off that bridge. So it's painstaking, you know. But that is how you uncover the truth, because that's how you separate the folklore, the urban legend, from the truth. And it's interesting to see what folk legends out there are true and not true based on how deep you go with it. But it is pretty time consuming.
That's actually a really good question. When you hear the folklore surrounding these places, how much of it winds up being rooted in the truth, and how much of it is just absolutely crap?
I think there's always a little bit of it rooted in the truth, but the truth can get spun out of control. Or, I mean, you know, that's where the folklore comes. You know, there's always something, though, that's, you know, rooted in truth. Like with the Colorado Street Bridge, it starts with, well, somebody, when they were building it, was poured into the concrete. And that's not true. What happened was a scaffolding fell, and about six guys fell, and one to his death. So it was a, you know, both of those are pretty awful, but one is more, you know, more of a folk story than you know, six guys falling. It sounds more haunted if it's a guy being poured into concrete alive.
It just seems like every bridge has somebody poured into the concrete, because that's a pretty common urban legend, just like every place is a brothel.
Oh, I thought that was union rigs.
At least one person poured into the concrete. I believe it.
Oh, Lord. But I mean, you hit on something there, though, because that's a really common thing you hear. And there are bridges. I mean, you know, when there's a high bridge, people are going to jump off of it, unfortunately. But it seems like there's a lot of folklore just surrounding bridges in general, as far as there's always somebody in the concrete. There's always, you know, millions of suicides. So,
and I study a lot of folklore and stuff like that. And in Europe, a bridge is also a place that where you make pacts with the devil.
Really?
Yeah, oh, there's actually what's known as devil's bridges throughout Europe.
Really? Are they like footbridges or something?
No, they're you know, full on Gothic medieval style bridges.
Wow.
And yeah, you can go ahead and look it up and do a little research. I always thought that was really fascinating. I wrote an article recently on our website about meeting the devil at the crossroads.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found that as like a little side note thing. I didn't think it was worth putting into my article, but it was just fascinating in general for the folklore of bridges.
Well, I find folklore and urban legends absolutely fascinating. It's something that I've looked into for years because I think that folklore and urban legends say something about who we are as a society and what we want to believe.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, you know, when you say folklore, when you say legend, it's, you know, you're just using words that are synonymous with religion. You know, one of my favorite things is a gentleman by the name of H.L. Mencken. And he was actually, you guys ever heard of the Scopes Monkey File? Remember that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he was actually he was a journalist that was covering the Scopes Monkey Trial. And one of the things that he said was, a legend is a lie that has achieved the dignity of age.
Yeah.
I like it. That's perfect. And so when you start to do the research then, how do you begin to separate the legend from the truth?
Well, I refer to it as a poodle in a microwave. I'm sure you're familiar with the whole, like, urban legend story of an old lady sticking a poodle in a microwave.
To dry it off because it was wet something?
To dry it off. I mean, come on, you've already heard it. So yeah. What I do is I used to refer to it when I was in the original tour business was, you know, if you had a story and you looked up how the story, the origin of the story, you had a poodle. And so I said, in order for a story to go into a tour, you had to have at least three poodles that all said the same thing. So it's amazing how you go to all these different sources, and all these different sources will say something a little bit different. They'll always find a way to change it and stuff like that. But unfortunately, it seems like a lot of these sources are really just parroting each other. They have no original thought process. There's no individual investigation that went on. They just basically wrote something that they read from somebody else who wrote about it.
It's like Shadowlands. The Shadowlands website. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I used to work for Disneyland, so I just like perusing the Disneyland section of that. So.
There's another thing, too, like when, you know, you hear an urban legend, you hear a piece of folklore, and you say, absolutely, that can't be true. And then you begin to look into it, and you find multiple sources that confirm it, and it's crazy. It's just too crazy to be real in your mind. But you know, there have been instances like that where it's like, you know, wow.
Are you saying the truth is stranger than fiction sometimes?
You absolutely
you don't want definitely. Yeah.
And I had that with the book Devil's Gate is about not only the bridge, but about NASA Jet Propulsion Lab, which is very near the bridge. And if you look at the Jack Parsons, and boy, oh boy, you know, rocket scientist by day, occultist by night, absolutely true. I mean, just, you know, it's unbelievable to think that somebody could have had those two sides to themselves and accomplished what they did and have the stature in the community that he had. Crazy, crazy stuff.
Wow. So let's talk about this bridge a little bit. So this is a bridge in where? Where is it located?
Pasadena, California.
Okay, and go ahead and tell me a little bit about it.
Well, the Colorado Street Bridge will be 100 years old this year. Very beautiful bridge. You know, kind of have a Gothic look. Like you're talking about the devil bridges. And it has had this history since it began where people have used it as a suicide perch. And, you know, consistently over these 100 years, it's never ceased. It's stopped here and there, but it's never completely stopped. at the height was the Depression, where, you know, there were upwards of, you know, 30, 40 people a year jumping off of it. And even last year there were three, you know, and the year before that, three or four. So it's this, you know, it's kind of a, just this troubling history that has spawned a lot of ghost stories. So, you know, I'm writing a novel series, and it's set in L.A., and I thought, well, you know, a haunted bridge sounds good, and might be something to, you know, sink my teeth into fiction-wise. But, you know, really, I like to do research. I like to investigate on my own. I think it makes for a better book, you know, regardless if it's fiction or not. I want it to be authentic. And so, you know, I dug into the history of that bridge, and it began to sort of unlock other things in the area. Devil's Gate Dam is nearby, and NASA Jet Propulsion is nearby. A place called Gravity Hill that I took Ernie is above NASA JPL, which is a hill where things roll up the hill.
A gravity hill. We have one in Washington too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it's, you know, I took Ernie there, and, you know, he was going in his car backwards up the hill, you know, and
isn't that crazy?
It is. And there's all these things that sort of tie together, and it was my job as sort of a fiction writer to put a thread through it. But I began to really think, you know, well, I mean, the bridge is absolutely haunted. I mean, I had experiences there that are undeniable. And so is Devil's Gate Dam, and so, you know, so this whole area really opened up to a pretty big story that got much larger than I first anticipated it would. But
what was awesome was, just to interject, was FJ offered to take us and a mutual friend and a couple of others out to the areas that were featured in his book. So we got to actually spend the whole day with FJ. We started at the Devil's Gate Dam. We actually hiked all the way down to the riverbed, and got to see the rock formations that, you know, actually looks like the devil's, you know, profile in the rock. There was two of them, right? But one of them we couldn't really see.
There were actually three, and one of them's gone now. They sandblasted it away, but. You know, these go back, you know, God knows how long. The Gabrielino Indians were afraid of these rock structures because they're very demonic, devil-like. You know, I mean, they have a horn, they have a nose, they have eyes. It's really crazy, you know. So it's got this kind of, you know, this past where, you know, history overlaps and different generations, you know, experience strange things. At this dam, which is again right at the base of NASA JPL, and mm-hmm. Now just over the years, lots of bizarre things have happened there. In the 1950s, three children vanished into thin air. Basically, I mean, they were with people, and they were there 1 minute and gone the next. No traces of them found. You know, still unsolved in LAPD. You know, and you go to this dam, and you get a weird energetic feeling there. I do. I mean, I get sort of headaches, and I feel a little tingly, and, you know, this was a place Jack Parsons, you know, hung around a lot and, you know, conducted rituals and occult rituals because he felt it had power. You know, Aleister Crowley called it one of the seven portals to hell, and it's a very, very strange place. I think you can attest to that, Ernie. It's got a very weird vibe.
Yeah, we were there. We were there in the morning. It was before noon, I think. And, you know, it was a little bit of a hike from the car to down where we went. And then we actually did a little bit of ITC in one of the tunnels under the bridge. And what did they catch? Or Ellen, one of our friends at Home Aaron was with us.
Yeah.
And she was asking some questions.
It was interesting. In 2010, when I started doing research on the book, I went to Devil's Gate Dam the first time. And there is this tunnel that kind of goes from one end of the dam to another. And when I was in that tunnel, I thought something threw a rock at me. Because I felt something whiz by my head and sort of hit the wall. And I thought, well, that's strange. I took a photo and there was an orb, but, you know, it's dusty and it could have been a dust orb. But we went back there with Ernie and Ellen Marin, who's a really gifted medium and psychic, and she had her spirit box, and I said, this is the place where I think something threw a rock at me. And on the spirit box, she's asking, is someone here? And the name Bill came like three times. Can you repeat that, Bill? Can you, you know, say it one more time, Bill? And said, do you know one of our names? And he said, Ellen. And said, how did you die? And we heard the devil. And she said, do you need us to pray for you? And he said, pray. And so everybody said a little prayer, and we heard, thank you. And it was just like, oh.
That's a little freaky.
It was real freaky. And it was, you know, right. It was daytime. I mean, the sun wasn't even down yet.
It doesn't matter. Freaky's freaky no matter how dark it is, all right?
it definitely almost sounds as...
We're getting some feedback. It's okay, Rick. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it definitely sounds like that entire area. The guy from JPI, he may be right. I mean, it sounds like there is some kind of energy there that just controls spiritually and not in a good spiritual way.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, in the case of the bridge, it's just so many people have ended their lives there. There's just no way there can't be, you know, an energetic, energetic pool there that just, I think it's like a magnet, you know, it gets stronger with each suicide.
And, so do you, you know, think people, that the people go there because they're in despair, or are they in despair once they get there?
I think they're in despair when they go there, but if you go there, you will be in despair fast. I've had the worst feelings of, I mean, the most hopeless feelings when I've been down there underneath that bridge. And it immediately affects you. It's not a place I like, and I, you know, if you go there, be wary, because I've talked to other paranormal investigators, same thing. You just go, and sometimes you feel ill, you get very depressed, you get very sad, and it just has, you know, I just think it's a magnet that, you know, if you're bleak and you're hopeless and you're thinking about suicide, it almost broadcasts a frequency. It doesn't make sense, you know. There's the 134 freeway bridge is right next to it. There's no barrier. You can just drive up and jump off. It's a little bit higher. No one does it. They make this effort to get up on this grand old bridge and scale the, you know, the suicide barrier they have up and jump. It's only 180 feet. It's not a sure thing, you know. Some people have jumped and they don't die for several hours, you know. So it doesn't add up. It's a very dark and strange and mysterious place to me.
Well, there are other places, you know, like, for example, in just outside of Tokyo, Aokigahara, that seems to be a place where...
The suicide forest?
Yeah, people forest go and die.
Yeah, I've done some research into that place. Charlie, have you looked into that one?
No, I haven't. I'm kind of like micromanaging myself right now. I read a little too much, and so I have to kind of be careful what I'm looking into, because the next thing I know is like 3 weeks later.
And, exactly. when you got a deadline.
Are you saying you go off on tangents? Because that's what I do.
Yes.
Yeah. I have a bookshelf that's pretty scary right now, and it's just getting bigger, unfortunately.
But it's just all so darn interesting.
It is. It is. That the forest in Japan is just, I mean, you know, there are like, you know, 100 people a year committing suicide there. It's just, it's outrageous.
It's just the 1950s.
It's so sad.
Yeah, I know one thing. I definitely don't want FJ on the Bureau of Tourism for Pasadena, you know. Come here, feel the despair.
Yeah. It's an interesting place. Even where I took you to lunch, Ernie, there's a restaurant. The name escapes me, but it's the Old Morgue in Pasadena, and you know the waiters all told us, you know, all kinds of ghost stories, you know.
Oh yeah,
it's a haunted old town.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So,
go ahead.
I said I was kind of toying around with the idea with FJ. I said, you know, that day that you took us on out there in Pasadena, we need to turn that into a tour. And,
that's what I was thinking, actually. That'd be awesome.
Do an all day tour, bus tour with lunch and, you know, have lunch at one of the haunted, restaurants in the area. But, it was an amazing day. And, FJ just has so much knowledge of the area, and just one story leads to another. So it was, it was a great experience. And so, you know, maybe sometime in the next few months when he's done with his book, we can start.
Yeah, that would be great.
Here's what I would suggest is if you're going to have people do that as a tour, make them sign liability waivers before you do.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's going to sound rather morbid, but to a place like that is, it's kind of Disney World to
a person
to
like
us. Yeah, to a person like me or a person like, you know, yourself, FJ, or Karen. It's like that is the place to go if you want to catch great evidence.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that's a double-edged sword. You know, if you go looking for something, you're going to find it.
Right.
And in that place, you will almost certainly find it. You can't help but bump into it. It's all over. It's like Gettysburg. I mean, I've been going to Gettysburg to work on a project unrelated, not paranormal related, historical related. And you go there and there's more ghosts in that town than people. I mean, it's absolutely, you don't need to be a psychic to feel it. You just go there and you feel it. They're just everywhere. You know, it's just a feeling that, and that's the way some of these places are.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. There are some places you walk in and you know.
Yeah, you just know.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I wanted to move from Haunted Orange to Haunted Hollywood, and then we'll move down to Haunted San Diego, because California is apparently a very haunted state. Now, there's a lot of fairly famous Haunted Hollywood legends. Rick was mentioning the Roosevelt Hotel, and then, of course, there's the Hollywood sign haunting, which I think sounds like an urban legend. So what can you tell us about Haunted Hollywood?
Well, you know, I write this novel series, and my protagonist, Kane Price, lives smack in Hollywood. He's a 28-year-old guy that lives right in the heart on Yucca Street. So, you know, from a perspective of writing, I've sort of walked his footsteps, and you know, craft stories that sort of have Hollywood flavor. But in doing that, have encountered some places on my own that are where I've had personal experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the right on Hollywood Boulevard, there are three in pretty close proximity. There's the Pig and Whistle restaurant, which has been around since, you know, the early 1920s. And then almost across the street directly is Musso and Frank restaurant. Again, the oldest restaurant in Hollywood, opened in 1919. You know, Orson Welles had a table, Charlie Chaplin had a table. This place is steeped in Hollywood history. And then a bar down on Hollywood and Vine called the Frolic Room is a place where my character goes a lot, but I've spent a lot of time in there over the years. And it's a tiny little bar, but it's got, you know, a very, very supernatural vibe to it. My experience in there was about 10, 12 years ago I was in there, and I was sitting at the bar with a friend of mine, and I looked up, and they have a mirror that runs the length of the bar behind the bartender's, you know, behind his back. And I looked into the mirror, and I wasn't looking at myself. It was another face looking.
How long did it take you to figure that out?
It was very quick. It was only, you know, a few seconds, but it was a guy that was bald and had a handlebar mustache. And I looked up and saw it, and it was, you know, I wasn't that drunk yet. It was early in the night. And, you know, that place has just had a, you know, there was a mob hit back there. The doorman was murdered like 3 years ago or 2 years ago. Unsolved murder. Just got a, you know, so that place, Musso and Frank is, as I said, really, really steeped in history. But, you know, Reuben, the bartender, he's been there since the early 1960s, and he'd be closing up at night and hear, you know, conversations going on in some of the booths, you know, as he's in there by himself. And, if you go there, ever sit at the bar, he'll tell you some of these stories. And, you know, I've gone there and just had, I take photos, when friends come into town or whatever, and there's always orbs in them, and they're very, very energetic and spiral. And, you know, the Roosevelt Hotel is down the street. And, you know, I've been in the ballroom there. That's where they had the first Oscars.
Right.
And you can feel the cold spot in that ballroom. I mean, it is on, you walk in the door of the ballroom and you go back and it's, you know, the left center of the room. There's a cold spot that you can actually measure, you know, and it's been, you know, there's a mirror where they say they, Marilyn Monroe's image is seen. That was in a room that she used to, practically live in. And Montgomery Clift is said to haunt the hotel. So Hollywood Boulevard is just, a great place. And then Hollywood Forever Cemetery is down on, Santa Monica Boulevard. And, I've had a personal experience in there that was, it was interesting. I went into the mausoleum researching and a novel that I have been working on for years about an unsolved murder. It's not paranormal related, but I went in to sort of see where the murder victim was buried because he's there. And I heard a voice coming from, you know, down the hallway of this mausoleum. And I thought, well, it was in the morning. It was like 11 in the morning. And I thought, well, I'll walk down and let this woman see me, and I'll see her. We won't scare each other. And as I walked toward this alcove where his voice was coming from, I just got that thing where, you know, all the hair stands up on my arms and neck, and I got chills, and I turned the corner, and there was nobody there. I mean, I heard this voice talking clear as day, and it was right at Rudolph Valentino. I looked up, and there was Rudolph Valentino's tomb. And I looked into it that afternoon, and there's supposedly a woman in black that haunts, you know, Valentino's tomb, and I've had that experience three times with a couple of people, where it got to a point where I thought, you know, the cemetery's putting this on. I mean, it has to be, because you can hear this woman a lot if you go in. You know, you will hear her voice. It is very audible. It sounds like a person. It's not that echoey. It sounds like a person talking, you know. So these are great, you know, spots, all in close proximity to each other, where you can sort of, you know, take a Saturday or Sunday and kind of dart around and see what you can find. It's and then again, Pasadena, you know, totally loaded with places. So it's a lot of fun. Hollywood is, as I told you on the break, it to me it's like a place where, you know, you either hit it huge or you know, Boulevard of Broken Dreams. It's kind of one or the other. And these people that hit it huge, I think they don't want to leave, you know? I mean, why? It's too fun. And I think they end up staying, you know, some of these old Hollywood fat cats. And, you know, so you kind of wander the cemetery and you see Cecil B. DeMille and you see, you know, Douglas Fairbanks. And you know, you realize these guys were, you know, they were the cat's pajamas, and I think they want to hang around so that they can, you know, still soak up the you know, the fans and the love and adoration and everything else that goes along with it.
See, and that's what I was going to ask. I mean, one of the big things, one of the reasons that they say people stick around after death is due to attachments. And I can't think of anything more to be attached to is fame, especially when you've had a huge taste of it. Do you think that that's why Hollywood and, you know, that general area is just brimming and brewing with, you know, paranormal phenomena?
You know, I kind of like to think that's kind of, you know, that's kind of my take on it You know, if we go to an afterlife and it's a level playing field, you know, that's not going to please, you know, these guys that had, you know, 65-room mansions. And they don't want to leave that, you know? I mean, why would you? So,
right.
And they had a lot of fun. I mean, they had a lot of fun. It was hedonism and decadence and everything. And, you know, I don't know that they want to go to hell, but I sure bet they don't necessarily want to go to heaven either, you know? So why not hang around here?
Well, I've heard of some of the, you know, some of the wild, incredibly wild parties that, you know, cats like Douglas Fairbanks had. I mean, to me, it sounded almost as if he was hosting, you know, two orgies a week.
Yeah. And, you know, Fatty Arbuckle, like, you know, he was making the equivalent of, like, you know, $30 million, today's money. Back then, he was making, you know, $2, $3 million a year in 1920, but he would throw these decadent parties and you know, actually had one party that where you know, a girl was, a young starlet was, you know, the rumor has it she was, you know, sexually assaulted with a champagne bottle, and she died, and he was put on trial, and he was ultimately exonerated, but it took like two or three trials. But her body is in the cemetery. You can walk by. One day I was walking through that cemetery, and there was Virginia Rappe, you know, right there, and it was like, wow. You know, right. So you got the big fat cats, you got their victims, you got everything in between, you know, so...
Well, let me ask you something, FJ. In your opinion, do you think Fatty did it?
In my opinion, he did not. I don't think he did that particular crime. I think he certainly hosted the party, and it got completely out of control. And I think, I mean, I have a theory that there was a power play going on in Hollywood at the time where. I think several stars were being discredited, you know, right. being set up so that they could humble the studio owners, different powers that be. I don't think that he, I think he was stupid, you know. He was just stupid to put himself in that position. I don't think he really did that, no.
Okay. There's one other, you know, legendary murder that has just always fascinated me about Hollywood and L.A., and that, of course, is the Black Dahlia.
Right.
The way they found that poor woman's body, or what was left of her body, is nothing short of brutal. And I've actually heard that her spirit does haunt that location where they found her body. Is there any truth to that?
Well, I've heard that, you know, I've heard she haunts three places. She haunts that spot, she haunts the Biltmore Hotel bar where she was last seen. And that she haunts a place called the Sullivan House in Hollywood. Now, there's a theory that the owner of that house, who was a noted surgeon, was the murderer, and that he took women to that house and brutalized and murdered them, and had such stature in the community that no one suspected him, and he covered tracks well because he was a doctor, you know. There's many. I mean, I don't really know. I don't have a particular theory that I'm convinced is the one. But certainly she's. You know, if there's ever a tortured ghost, it would have to be someone like her. I mean, it's just beyond belief. I mean, she was, it was a Jack the Ripper style, even worse. You know, she was actually bisected and laid out and on the street in a very, very calm fashion. It was just really, really, really brutal and bizarre.
Yeah, and she was an actress, right?
She was an actress, wannabe actress. She wasn't very good. She was having a hard time. You know, she went from, she kind of coasted through Hollywood bar to bar to bar looking for, sugar daddies, looking for, producers who could help her. You know, it's kind of a sad life.
She should have met Fatty Arbuckle.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, we actually are like 10 minutes past our break time, so we need to take a break, and then we can keep talking when we get back. Sound good?
Sounds great.
All right, perfect.
Okay, so we're going to go to break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. We're having a great conversation about haunted places in Southern California. Stick around. It's Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com. A proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.org.
In her riveting novel, Break in the Beyond, writer Kim Casey brings to life a supernatural tale filled with mystery, humor, and intrigue. Kim's suspenseful story focuses on Risa, a compassionate social worker who assists Owen, a young psychiatric patient. Is a 300-year-old entity speaking through Owen, or does he simply possess multiple personalities? Visit awningpublishing.ca to order your copy of Breaking the Beyond. That's A-H-N-E-E-N publishing.ca.
First there came radio, and it was good. Then it got bad. Then there came satellite radio, and it was okay. Then it got too expensive and kind of sucked. Now there is something new, something better, something free. Stitcher Radio for the iPhone and BlackBerry. With Stitcher, you can hear all the shows and podcasts you can imagine, rate them, and build your own station. No downloading, no syncing, no problem. Just pick a station to get started, like American News and Politics. Now, look at the shows you have to pick from. Pick one and start listening. Like it, make a favorite, and start your own station. Don't like it? Thumb it down and say bye-bye to shows like it. Or thumb it up to find more like it. Plus, you can search and find your favorite podcasts. We have over 1,000 shows to pick from. Stitcher Radio, the natural evolution in audio listening. And it's free.
On the go and missing another one of your favorite Z-Talk shows? Now you don't have to. Simply go to the Google Play Store on your Android phone and download the Z-Talk Radio app. The best part is, it's absolutely free. That's Z-Talk Radio. Only found in your Google Play Store on your Android phone. Download it today.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen and Rick. And tonight, joining us, we have three guests, and we've been having very lively conversations about the dead. We are being joined by F.J. Lennon. He is the author of Devil's Gate and Soul Trapper. And we also have Ernie Alonzo, who is Haunted Orange County, as well as Charles Spratley, who is the lead tour guide of Haunted Orange County and author of Piercing the Veil, Examining San Diego's Haunted History. So, hey, guys, thank you so much for sticking around for another segment.
The pleasure.
Outstanding. Great. So, Ernie, you know, let's head back over to your event that you got coming up, Haunted Heritage 2013. You know, when exactly is that, and what are we to expect from it?
The event is on Saturday, February the 23rd, and what it is, it's a cluster of Victorian homes that was moved to L.A., an area of L.A. back in the late 70s. Okay. And we did an investigation there last year in February, and we're going to repeat that event this year on the 23rd. And we're going to have a couple of guest investigators. One is Ben Hansen with Sci-Fi's Factor Faked, mm-hmm. and you've had Ben on the show a few times before. And
hell of a nice guy.
And also AJ Barrera, who is a psychic medium and a very credible guy, amazing to work with. And this is our first event that we're doing with him, so we're really excited to have him joining us. And then we're also going to be joined by Scott Grunewald, who has a show on the Travel Channel called Paranormal Paparazzi. It just got renewed for a second season, and so he'll be there with us as well. And basically what guests are going to be able to do, they're going to be able to investigate four different Victorian mansions with four sets of investigators. So what we'll do is we'll rotate around the houses, and the investigative teams will stay in place. So we'll get a chance to investigate each of the houses with different investigators. We are actually sold out, except I believe there are two general admission tickets left. Our VIP sold out right away. But if you want more information on the event, you can go to hauntedoc.com, and there's a big banner on the homepage that you can click. And then two of your guests tonight will be some of our special guests at the event. FJ will be there, as well as Charles Spratley, who's our lead tour guide, as well as a historian and author of the book Piercing the Veil. Then we'll also have Sally Richards, who wrote a book called Ghost Hunting in Southern California, along with John Temporelli, who wrote a book with Peter James called Heaven, Can You Hear Me? So they'll all be there, and they'll join the guests for the VIP hour. So, definitely there's more information on our website, hauntedoc.com.
And Ernie, I understand you have to skedaddle. Was there anything else you wanted to share with people before you headed out?
Well, we have an event that we're planning out in conjunction with the Santa Ana Historical Preservation Society here in Old Town Santa Ana, California. It is going to be an evening of Edgar Allan Poe. And
my favorite.
So it's an old Victorian mansion there in Old Town Santa Ana. And so we're going to have readings throughout the evening. We're going to have some special guest appearances who are going to be reading some of his works. We'll also have a few performances, musical performances. So we're still in the process of figuring out the price point on it and everything else. But as soon as we get more information on that, you'll be able to find that on our website, hauntedoc.com.
Great. Very good. And when you have more stuff coming on, you know you're always welcome here, right?
Definitely. And I really appreciate you guys having us on. And
we loved having you.
I want to thank FJ and FJ Lennon and Charlie for joining us as well. And I'm sure you guys will continue a great conversation soon.
We will. We're going to talk about you as soon as you leave.
Yep.
Great.
Behind your back.
Behind your back, okay, yeah, absolutely. There will be no part. Right. That part of the podcast will be mysteriously cut out.
I'm
just
saying.
Hey, thank you so much, Ernie. It's a pleasure having you on, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
See you on. Thank you, guys. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. So, you know, FJ, I wanted to touch a little bit more on your fiction novels, especially your character, Kane Price. He seems like a very complicated person, especially a person who hunts ghosts. What is with Kane Price, and what makes him such a complicated character?
Well, you know, I was shooting for, when I created Kane, you know, I didn't want him to be a transparent character. I've always loved noir. I've always loved Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett, And the reason I love them is, you know, the Philip Marlowe and you know, Sam Spade, they're very flawed. You know, they're deeply flawed. They usually have you know, problems with other people, problems with themselves, and but you know, they've got a heart in there. You just have to sort of dig to find it. And they feel real to me, you know. And so when I set out to make Kane, I gave him a background where, you know, he has a hard time relating to people, trusting people. He lives in the heart of Hollywood. He wrestles with substance abuse. He, you know, wrestles with angst and loneliness and anxiety of trying to live in a town where, you know, everyone is, you know, uber focused on fame and celebrity. And, you know, I feel like he's very, very real to me. A lot of readers really like that, and some readers are looking, you know, they're wondering, you know, why he doesn't have a full character arc and transformation in the first novel, and, you know, how can he sort of be, you know, flawed at the end, you know, aren't heroes supposed to emerge, you know, by the last page of the book? But, I look at it like, you know, he's on a journey, there are several books, you know, it's going to be a long, slow haul until he sort of figures himself out. And you know, I just like characters that that feel real, and you know, you get to see all sides in them, good, bad.
Like my kind of character, actually.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Imperfect in every way.
Yeah, he sometimes surprises me, and sometimes he's really despicable. You know, I never know what he's gonna do.
Isn't that amazing when you write a character and they sort of take on a life of their own?
Yes, it is. It is. It's a very rewarding thing. It's very, you know, there are times I'll be somewhere in Hollywood and I'll be walking down a street at night at midnight and I'll think, you know, I'm going to run into him, you know, but when I'm in my house, I never think that, you know, it's,
sure,
he'd never be here in a million years, you know, but sometimes, you know, he feels near and dear, you know, he feels, he's somebody I really care about, you know, like somehow I know him, and you know, we do have a relationship.
And you know what? I bet that comes through in your writing. I'm sorry I haven't read any of your books, but like I say, it's going on my Kindle. And I also hear that you've had some kind of exciting news about this character.
I have. You know, the novels were optioned for television, so. I mean, that, you know, it was optioned by Jared Creative Group, who I really, really, Seth Jarrett is a guy I really admire. He does the show Celebrity Ghost Stories and School Spirits on Sci-Fi.
Oh, I like, those are fun shows. Yeah,
those are great
shows. They're good, and he's a good filmmaker, and he's looking to, you know, make this his first sort of scripted show. He has a lot of reality and ghost kind of shows on, so... you know, he's someone I met a few years ago, and he got he read the book and liked it, and he understood it. I mean, he's a, you know, Kane's a burgeoning musician as well. So he's, you know, he's in the Hollywood music scene, and, you know, Seth has a background of you know, directing videos for, you know, for musicians. And so, you know, he gets the character, and, you know, while there's no guarantees, I couldn't be happier that he's the guy championing it out there. So I'm excited.
Well, congratulations. That's fantastic. And I'll look forward to hopefully seeing that on television at some point. Huh?
Well, I hope so. Boy, my fingers and toes are crossed. But I appreciate the fact you're going to read it. I hope you like it. And please let me know. And
so it's the first, you said this is a trilogy. Is Soul Trapper the first book of that?
Soul Trapper is the first book, yes,
okay.
And then Devil's Gate second, and Hellfire, which I am wrapping up now, will be the third. And, you know, I hope it continues, but I know, you know, it was originally a trilogy, but I have lots of room to expand it if people want to continue publishing it.
Well, I'm excited to read them. It sounds like something that I will like very much, and I'm always looking for good stuff to read, so thank you for that. So, I wanted to bring Charlie back in because you have written Piercing the Veil, right? And it's about haunted San Diego.
Yes, it is, yeah.
It was really a pleasure, and it was really, really fun to put together. So
San Diego has some places that are the legendary kind of places that you would expect. There's, of course, Whaley House, the hotel, the big hotel on the water.
The Hotel Del Coronado.
Thank you. Yeah. And so now tell us about the real haunted San Diego.
That's a tough one. what do you want to know? I mean, I cover those places in my book, and really
are
the whole premise of my book. I look at it two ways. One, I'm a total skeptic, and I'm very scientific, and I'm a great historian, and I'm about as psychic as a sandwich.
I've eaten some pretty darn psychic sandwiches before.
But, so what I do is I look, when I first started writing the book, I collected almost every single book that I can find on ghost stories about San Diego. I perused the internet, I got newspaper clippings and stuff like that, and then I collected all the stories and I said, now let's go find the truth behind all these stories. And so not once do I ever say, this place isn't haunted. Not once do I ever say, there's no such thing as ghosts. But what I do say is I follow the story as far as it'll go.
Okay.
And sometimes it pans out, and sometimes the truth is so far from the legend.
So was Yankee Jim actually hung where they say he was in the Whaley House?
Well, first off, men are hanged. Hung is this really bad syntax.
oh, man, we had a grammar Nazi there for a second.
Christmas decorations are hung.
That's because I've never hanged anyone.
Oh, yeah, you should try it. Start with the neighbors. you know what? Is that true? Maybe, maybe not. There are so many. Well, first off, there's not a single newspaper around from that day in the San Diego area.
Okay.
Okay.
So, that newspaper, the day that he was hanged, was gone. You know, there's no existing newspaper from that day.
Really?
So, you know, there are several different renditions later. There are two contemporary sources from that time period in San Diego. One isn't until several years later that they retell the story of Yankee Jim, and another one isn't until 40 years later. And so that by that time, almost everybody who was there was dead. So you can't really give an accurate account. And the story itself changed so much, you know, to where the hanging itself, the gallows were south of the plaza. They were on a hill near the plaza, you know, so if it turned out, and also, you know, you could say, well, it's where Thomas Whaley's property is, but Thomas Whaley owned over 12 acres of land in that area. So the idea that it was actually built where the house now stands,
right,
you know, really doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, it could, and it could be possible that it did happen.
Mm-hmm.
But as to being a definite, and there even the legend that the gallows were where the parlor and the living room separate, if you ever heard that story.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, the only problem is that the house actually did like a 90-degree turn during a restoration.
Okay, well, that makes it a little different. So, also, there's a lot of legends and of San Diego, a lot of them to do with Old Town. And so you've really looked into these. How about the Julian Hotel? Now, I've heard that there's some stuff going on there. What does the history say?
The Julian Hotel is one of my favorites. And the only thing that really upsets me is that it's one of my favorites more because I'm championing it. I get a lot of people say, well, you're just like a total skeptic or you're just a debunker. You know what I am? I consider myself a spiritual advocate.
Okay.
That's really what I am. I like to find the truth that I can unravel these stories. There are, if you if you have an internet search engine and you just go ahead and look up the Julian Hotel, the most prominent story is the reason that Albert Robinson, the owner of the hotel, the reason he haunted is because he was not allowed to be buried in the whites-only cemetery.
Okay.
Okay.
There is no whites-only cemetery in Julian. There's only one cemetery, and he's buried there.
Oh. So that sort of makes it legend.
Yeah, I mean, he could be haunting the place. Maybe he doesn't like the gelato there. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, I don't think anybody can ever definitively say this is why this dude's haunting this place, because we don't know. You know,
no, you don't know.
Yeah, you can't definitively say why I'm sitting here in this chair right now. You don't know.
Sure. But you know what, though, Charles? I just think that makes you a very careful researcher. There's just so much crap that it's almost incredibly hard to get through. It is.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying it's not fun crap. if you're just in the mood of telling a campfire ghost story, then I don't have a problem for that. You know, put a hook for a hand, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, like we were talking about in the break, you know, we're talking about earlier, you know, the Whaley House is the most, you know, haunted house in the nation or something like that. And, you know, and how many places places that you read or places that you looked up, you know, where it says that the Whaley House is the most haunted?
Well,
right?
It just depends on where you look, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You heard that, right?
Sure, I have heard that.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. The reason how they got that, they actually have so many people write that they're actually registered as haunted by the United States government.
It is.
And that's true. Now, they're actually registered as haunted in a very small brochure that came out in the 1970s for when historical homes, there's a place called the United States Travel Service, that they wanted to boost tourism in the United States from foreign visitors, and so they asked any historical home that had a ghost tour to put their name down. And so this brochure came out that, you know, lists these historical homes, you know, Winchester House, the Robert E. Lee House, all these famous homes throughout the country that also had ghost tours. So, yeah, it is designated as haunted by the U.S. government. And that's pretty unfortunate.
Wow, that's fascinating. I didn't know that. I wanted to ask about the Hotel Del Coronado, because that place is gorgeous. But is it?
It is. It is gorgeous. And you know what? I don't question the story of Kate Morgan at all. Mm-hmm. The truth is there. You know, the newspaper, like I said, you start with what you have. You go to the library. I pull up her coroner's inquest, and you spend all night reading this coroner's inquest, and then you read all the newspaper stories and stuff like that, and you follow the newspaper articles through L.A. and San Francisco, and it makes a great story. And, you know, and the thing is that so few people actually know the whole story, you know, and so they rely on, you know, myths and legends and stuff like that. You know, there are so many websites and books that I have on my bookshelf that, you know, they say, oh, well, she was riding the rails with her husband and he was a card shark and she was in on it and she was pregnant, and none of it is true.
Okay.
Absolutely none of it is true. The one thing that we can tell you, and I can tell you, is that she was a con man.
Oh.
Okay.
She was. She operated under several aliases while she lived in California, and she was not traveling the rails with her husband because she ditched her husband in Iowa. And she ran off with a relative of hers.
Really?
Oh, wow.
That's
okay.
Far less romantic, but to me, a more interesting story.
Yeah, no, and that's the whole thing. In the end, truth is so much more fascinating. I was on a ghost tour one time in San Diego because I just wanted to hear what other people were saying, and we stopped by a very famous Gothic house there called the Villa Montezuma.
Mm-hmm.
You guys ever heard of it?
Yes.
I'm actually on the restoration board for that house. And But it was just really, really fascinating that, you know, this guy on this tour actually told these people that he died in the house of tuberculosis. And after the tour, I'm like, wait a second, he died in his 70s in Los Angeles, you know? And he actually died of heart complications due to malnutrition.
Well, that's like, kind of an interesting story.
It's such a more interesting story, but he wanted to make the house as haunted as he could.
Well,
could Jesse Shepherd be haunting the Villa Montezuma? Maybe it was the only property he ever owned, and he absolutely loved that house, but he definitely didn't die in it.
Well, but, you know, this is one of the things that actually you've just touched on something that drives me crazy. When I tell somebody a place is haunted that I've been, they're like, well, who died there? Why is there a rule that somebody has to die somewhere for that place to be haunted?
Yeah.
You know, wouldn't every nursing home be the scariest place on earth?
Yeah.
I mean, they are, but for different reasons. Yeah. Go ahead, Brick.
I was just going to say, it just seems like whenever you say somebody died of tuberculosis in this country, so many different places, like, oh, yeah, that's definitely haunted. You know, people died of tuberculosis there, so, yes.
Well,
definitely.
Waverly Hills. Waverly Hills, actually, I know somebody who did a lot of historical research on Waverly Hills, lived in the area, and they say something like 67,000 people died. Or,
yeah,
I mean,
but only a very small portion of people actually died there.
Right. It's not anything like what they say. They use these huge numbers because it sounds more haunted, or does it just get exaggerated over time? Or, you know, how do we get from, you know, a couple people died somewhere to, Cheryl thinks 6,000, sorry. So, but how do we get from, you know, 30 people died to 10 million people died here.
Yeah, and it really is unfortunate. I love hearing about a good ghost story, and I look at it from every single angle, and I find in newspaper clippings, and I talk to the people at the Historical Society, and it totally pans out, and I just go, oh, good, finally, next. You know, I love that. I love finding those stories, but on the flip side of it, I get so disappointed when I hear a story and I follow it. It's not anything like what's told.
But I think that that's a good cautionary tale for people who do paranormal research, who do paranormal investigation, is the truth is usually quite different than the legend. And I think I can state that fairly categorically, that when you hear the stories of these haunted places, they're filled in with supposition and exaggeration and anything to make the story better.
Especially exaggeration.
Yeah. And that's really what I wrote the book. I wrote the book for really two groups of people. One, you either don't really care about the ghost story too much, and you just want the history angle on it. And for that, I think you'll really love it, because it's kind of a quirky little history book. Mm-hmm. But if you like ghost stories and stuff like that, then I say, well, at least when you go to these places and you want to try to investigate these places, you now know the real story behind these places.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think that's very worthwhile. So, gentlemen, we have come to the part of our program where we need to wrap up. So here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to give you both the opportunity to tell our listeners where they can find your book, say the name of your book again, and how they can find more information about you, get in contact with you, anything, basically any shameless plug you would like to throw in. Now is the time. Let's start with you, Charles.
I'm Charles Spratley, author of Piercing the Veil, Examining San Diego's Haunted History. I'm working on my second book right now, and cranking out some ideas for it. You can pick up my book through Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Also, local bookshops throughout the San Diego area are now carrying.
Very good.
And that's it.
Outstanding.
Okay. All right, FJ.
You can find me at fjlennon.com, fjlennon.com, and from there, you can link to all my social pages, Facebook, Twitter, my blog, as well as you can buy the books directly from Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It's on, you know, e-readers. It's a physical book, so pretty readily available.
I really, you know, appreciate the opportunity to let me sort of plug the series and talk about it a little bit.
Fantastic. Gentlemen, it's been a fantastic conversation. And I have to say also, I know both of you stepped up at the very last minute as we had some crazy mad scheduling changes with Ben and flights and Ernie. And so thank you both for stepping in and giving us a really interesting show tonight.
Thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure.
I really enjoyed it. A lot of fun.
Yeah, I hope you guys will come back when you've got more to tell us.
Anytime.
Absolutely.
Anytime, yep. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Bye.
All right, so there they go. Charles Spratley and F.J. Lennon. And, you know, I'm very serious. Both of their books look really fun, really fascinating, and I've got some reading to do. What about you, Rick?
Yeah, you know, I definitely I am going to touch on F.J.'s novels. I like the whole idea of the noir angle. I think that's great, and definitely the character of Kane Price. He just he sounds like the kind of guy you don't want to hang out with, but at the same time, he's a good guy you may want to know. And so, I definitely want to check out those books just because of that. Because I've been told a couple times from people that I'm sort of like that. So but I used to be
gold,
anyways at one time.
Part of gold, mouth of garbage or something? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. But I'm definitely going to, I'm not really too much of a fiction reader, but I think I'm going to hit those up.
Yeah, definitely. Me too. I read fiction. I read more nonfiction, but I do read fiction. And I like fiction when I want to escape. So that sounds good to me. So, Cheryl got us a really exciting guest coming up on February 14th, on Valentine's Day. So I'm about to tell you why you should listen to Paranormal Underground Radio instead of going out with your sweetheart. I have the date right, Cheryl?
Yes.
All right. We are going to be talking to, I'm going to say, the Elvis of ufology, quite frankly.
And, I'm going to say the Hans Holzer of ufology.
And Rick is going to be in his ultimate fanboy state, where he tries not to titter like a little girl.
Anime schoolgirl.
Yeah, we are going to be talking to Stanton T. Friedman. And I have to tell you, if you've never heard Stanton talk, if you've never seen him on a UFO show, which if you've ever watched a UFO show ever,
you probably have.
He is the most fun. The guy is a walking soundbite. He is so fun to talk to. He's so fun to listen to. And so you guys all need to tune in that night, because that's going to be great. Next week, we've got a show coming up that's going to be a little more serious, but I'd really like to encourage you to tune into that, too. And we're going to be talking to Shane Harris and Elaine Davison. And his wife is, she died recently, very recently, from complications from a lung infection, essentially, that she contracted while doing a paranormal investigation. And so he's made it his mission to educate people, and Elaine has helped with that, and she's written a great little handout about safety in the paranormal, which I just edited it last night, as a matter of fact. It's got some really good information and things that really I think people need to think about, because I think we get so wrapped up in our enthusiasm to go into some place that we don't stop and think there might be mold here, there could be electrical hazards here. And so we're going to be talking about
there.
That. So I think that's a really important show to listen to, and to encourage people on your team and other teams, particularly young teams, to listen to. So we'd like to invite you to join us all for that next week. And then, I don't know, we have other exciting stuff coming up, Cheryl.
We do. I want to thank our guests for tonight, Ernie, Charles, and FJ. A big thanks, and especially FJ and Charles, for stepping in at the last minute. And hopefully we can get Ben Hansen back on here in the near future, as he had some travel issues tonight, so we couldn't make it.
The Travelocity gnome did not spin in his favor tonight.
No. But it was, oh my gosh, I love this show. It was great conversation.
Yeah, it was a great show anyway.
Yeah,
I have a few new books to add to my reading list, so that's good. And it's always good to hear from Ernie because he has some interesting events that go on around here. And so, I do get out to the Queen Mary sometimes, but I need to get to one of his events because they sound like they're really cool. Yeah. So, basically, thanks to you guys, and hopefully we can talk to them again in the future when they have some new stuff come up. And, Karen, you did a good job introducing some of the shows we have upcoming. Other than that, we have Deb Lance, Rick, who Rick's scheduled for February 7th, and Deb is a medium, and so we'll be talking to her on the 7th of February, and then skipping up ahead to February 21st, we're going to be talking to Duncan Lunan, who wrote Children from the Sky. And
that sounds creepy.
Yeah.
Sounds ominous.
Like about those black-eyed children or something, is it?
Well, honestly, I haven't read it, but it's I'm on his page right now. Actually, I'll just read you what it says. It's a speculative interpretation of a medieval mystery, The Green Children of Woolpit.
Oh, very good. Yeah, yes. That's always been one of my favorite legends.
So he's
of medieval England.
Yeah, so it's going to be an interesting show. Get to talk to him about that. And let's see, who else do we have? We have
in our grab bag of guests,
good goodies. Oh, moving forward, we have a show with Chelsea DeMolly, and I hope I'm pronouncing her last name correctly, but she's
You're
one
probably
of
not.
She probably anyway. Not. I never do. she's one of the stars of A&E and Bio Channel's Haunted Encounters Face to Face, and so we'll get to talk to her in March. That one's in March, and then we have some members of San Diego Ghost Hunters coming to join us on March 7th to talk about what they're up to. And I know Jack Kenna does a lot of stuff with them when he's in town, so they
and
often.
We like Jack.
Yeah, they often investigate the Whaley House. I'm like all over the place here. The Whaley House, and I know they, the Star of India and other sites well known for hauntings down there in San Diego. So that'll be fun. And we did do a pre-record with Amy Allen and Steve DeShavi.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we have that ready to air, but we actually need to hold that until March 7th. We'll air that on March 7th for half of that show. We have another interesting person that I'm still kind of finalizing a date with, but I think we're good to go at some point here. Andrew Basiago. Okay, here I go again. Basiago?
I would guess Basiago.
Basiago. Okay. He's the leader of Project Pegasus, and if you want to go... go to Google, type in Project Pegasus. He's an interesting guy, and there's a lot going on in his research and life and experiences, and so hopefully we'll get to talk to him here soon
it
as well.
It has its own Wikipedia page.
Yay! Yeah, but it involves a lot of interesting things, one of which is time travel.
Oh, nice. I was like talking about that.
Well, are you okay, Karen?
Group, Alternate Sources, United States.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's some interesting stuff going on there. So, yeah, I mean, we just have a lot of great guests. We have a few others that I'm working on, but I'll just hold off on that for now until we get some confirmation. And it's going to be, I think, great. I mean, we've already had so many great guests this year. We're just going to, I think moving forward, we're just going to keep having some really great interviews. So it's exciting.
It is. Now, here's what I would like to know.
Yes.
Did you learn of any places in Orange County that will you be heading to the Pasadena Bridge and Devil's thing and all of that?
Seriously, I had not heard of that. I think it sounds intriguing. I would definitely consider it. And really, honestly, the only places that I've been around here have been the Queen Mary several times. That's really where we go. And then we've been to the Whaley House as well. So around here, I haven't really explored enough, and I'm definitely going to check these out. I know. It's like, can you believe that? You'd think I'd have gone to some more haunted places around here, but I haven't even scratched the surface.
I guess not. Wow.
Yeah, and I'm
questioning your.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this Project Pegasus website.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think about time travel?
Cheryl?
I think it would be extremely cool because, you know, you have the topic of time travel, you have the topic of teleportation, and I think that I'm not quite sure if we had the ability to time travel. I don't know. I think things might be a little bit different, but
do you know? Because I've written about this for the magazine before that quantum teleportation is a reality.
Yes,
they can teleport small things like a particle. I mean, things that would be visible with the naked eye, but barely.
Okay.
But here's the deal. They can't do it with a complex organism, and the reason is because of that. Like the plot of that Hugh Grant movie where he's the magician and he does the big trick. What's the name of that movie? I can't
you
remember.
You mean Hugh Jackman? Hugh Jackman?
You have to destroy it and create an exact copy, and that's how it's teleported.
Right.
And that's what Hugh, it's, what was that? I just watched it, too.
Oh, yeah, I know. I've seen that movie like 3 times.
The Prestige.
The Prestige, okay. Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, and so that, actually, The Prestige, that's how they're doing teleportation, is creating a copy, an exact copy, which is why it's only a small, single, you know, particle, as opposed to, Chad just said the fly. That's right, because you don't want to be teleported, because if there is a fly in the room with you, you are so screwed.
The Illusionist, that was, who was that with? Was that with?
I don't know. Well, the Hugh Grant one it was The Prestige.
Yeah, that's The Prestige.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, it is. That's a good one.
So teleportation is actually possible on a very small scale. And so if that stuff is possible, and if quantum computing, which actually goes backwards and forwards in time, but that's a whole other subject. It just strikes me that probably time travel is possible. We just haven't figured out the rules of the universe that make it allowable yet.
Well, I'm going to tell you Mr. I'm like tongue-tied today. Mr. Basiago has actually participated in a time travel project.
Really?
So, yes. So, Karen, you could be right and wrong.
That's so insightful. So when are you talking to him?
She was right in the past, but wrong in the future.
Right.
Vice versa.
I don't know yet. I'm working on it.
I exist in a state of quantum superposition, just like Schrodinger's cat, where
there you go.
I'm either dead or alive, right or wrong. I'm waiting for the observer to come along and observe so we know what the answer is. Did I just...
Yeah.
You totally just blew my mind. Because, no, seriously, I am not, like, really, really up on the whole quantum thing.
You Jackman, that's why.
I kept saying Jackman, but you just didn't even hear me.
I thought you were calling me
Jackoff. He kept saying Grant.
You know, I'm not very good with names. I don't even know my own name most mornings.
That's all right.
Wake up in the mirror and think, who is that old woman? Who dat?
That's Karen in the future.
So, yes, I'm sorry. You know, William asked me for the Oregon Ghost Conference. He actually wanted me to talk about quantum physics. And I said, William, I said, people will get up and leave the room. I'll be sitting there talking to you sitting in a chair.
Right.
So instead I'm going to be talking about afterlife research. But he actually wanted me originally to talk about quantum physics because he read the article that I wrote for Paranormal Underground years ago now.
Wow, yeah.
About,
it's been a while.
You know, the quantum physics and the paranormal. But I know, I mean, when I talk about it to people, I see their eyes glaze over.
Well, and here's the thing. When you get into time travel, and Mr. Basiago kind of talks about this in his work, what about alternate dimensions, switching realities or what have you? I mean, I think he talked about running into himself.
Wait, doesn't that rip the space-time continuum
apart? These are the questions that we have. We need some answers.
Oh, my God, Rick,
prepare to
have your mind blown.
It's going to be one of those nights where I'm just going to crawl into the corner and suck my thumb. You know?
I'm excited about that. When can we expect this? Because I'm excited.
I don't know. I want to say either in the late February or early March, but I'm still working on a date.
Oh, okay. It's going to be awesome, Rick. You can't call in sick that night. It's going to be awesome.
No, and speaking of which, I won't be able to do the show next week. Family stuff. Fun family stuff, so I will not be joining our listeners next week.
Oh, well, we'll miss you.
You notice he did it on the air, so we can't yell at him.
I know.
We're like, oh, okay.
I'm covered.
Have fun. That's right. So we have Fox City's Paranormal coming up after us. Stick around for that. And come back next week when I, and Cheryl maybe, will be chatting with Elaine Davison and Shane Harris. And that will be at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and other times in the flyover states. We will talk to you guys next week. It's Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Have a great night.
Good night, everyone.
You.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.